Welcome everyone to our meeting, which is the Personnel Committee meeting. Before we start, I'll just read out our usual notice. Please note that this meeting will be recorded and the sound recording subsequently made available via the Council's website. In addition, please be advised that under the Openness of Local Government Bodies Regulation 2014, that other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any images or sound recordings is not under the Council's control. If you have any queries about these arrangements, please speak to the Democratic Services Officer who is administering the meeting. So with that, welcome to everyone. First off, we have apologies. We have apologies this evening from Councillor Barclay, who is replaced by Councillor Savage. However, Councillor Barclay has accidentally turned up this evening, so is now a member of the public sitting listening to the meeting. So welcome to everyone else. The minutes of the previous meeting, whilst I know it probably doesn't feel like this is actually a gap between meetings. In fact, the last full meeting of the Personnel Committee was actually the 2nd of April 2019. Which was actually in the previous sort of calendar period for the council. However, everyone's got a copy of those. Is everyone happy with, for those who are actually on the meeting or attended the meeting, hopefully they'll recognise the minutes, but otherwise, everyone else who has subsequently joined the committee, are you happy with the accuracy and you're happy that I can actually sign those minutes?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, thank you very much. Right, now going on to disclosure of community and personal interests.
Sorry, Chair, just one quick thing about item two. There were actually
Eighth of July as well, apologies.
And 30th of June. Just because obviously members of the committee are doing some special meetings. So
yes, and the 30th of June, which I was going to say, the last two, everyone was here, so, Councillor Savage, so... they will actually remember those. All of those, everyone's happy with.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Right, so now on to item three, disclosure of pecuniary and personal interest. Any to declare? No? Thank you very much. In which case, questions under committee procedures 12.8. We haven't had any questions submitted. So that leaves us on to the main section of the committees. I think probably. Obviously, everyone's had a good opportunity to read all the papers and absorb them all. So I think for all of these items, it might be worthwhile if we actually take them as read and then direct questions from those papers directly to you, if that's okay, Gil, and likewise, if any need to be directed to you, Simon, as well. So if we take it on that basis, then I think we're straight into the meat of the papers rather than actually re-presenting them. So if we can start with item five, which is the JN CC appointment of councillors. That paper itself, I'll start off with, are there any questions before we actually get to the decision-making part of that paper? Any questions of accuracy or explanation that anyone requires? Okay, so as far as the paper's concerned, we require a number of names to be appointed to the panel. From memory, I'm just quickly checking the paper, I think it's four individuals, three from the majority party and one from the opposition. The previous members were Councillors Morgan, Poland and Barclay, and I think the previous Labour nomination obviously was Councillor Dreadlock, who's only on the committee. Can I take it from the Labour Party perspective first? Do you have a nomination that you'd like to put forward?
Actually discussed it, have we?
No.
Either toss a ball.
Are you happy to do it?
I'm happy to do it. I'm equally happy for you to do it.
Well, we have two committees, so you could actually take one each.
Okay. Well,
if that helps.
Yes.
Okay. So Councillor Ward, do you want to go for the first one?
No, I don't.
Sorry, Chair.
Sorry, apologies. Because there's another item.
Yes, but I'm just saying, obviously, in terms of pointing to the committee, I don't think we can split the meeting.
No. Sorry. I'm just saying for the sake of the two items. Yeah. So for this item, if one person wants to nominate a name.
That's fine.
Is that okay? Yeah, that's fine. You're okay with that. And on from the Conservative side, would you be happy to carry on those three names? Or is it anything else? Okay. So in which case, we're happy with that?
So sorry, just two from the Labour Party, Councillor. Right, sorry, just to be clear, right, Councillor Ward, and then we've got
Councillors Barclay, Morgan, and Poland.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, we're now on to item six, which appointments to the panels, which is the second item, which is actually comprises of five councillors. First off, can we take any questions or clarity or information that you wish to ask? Everyone's happy with that? Good. So in which case, we're being asked to nominate five councillors. Again, from memory, it's four from, I think, the Conservatives and one from Labour. As far as the Labour council is concerned, are you happy,
yes,
Councillor Baldwin, that it's you?
Yeah.
Okay. And from the Conservative side, happy to take nomination. I can't quite. Do we actually? I don't think we actually had a list of who was actually on it previously.
Yeah. Yeah.
Page
19.
Barclay, Morgan, Poland, and Snart from our side.
Okay. So we have four names. Unless anyone wishes to change over those, and I'm more than happy for any to be changed.
I don't think either of these have actually met in the last year, I think.
No, it's not the world's busiest meeting, I don't think.
I think the key meeting is probably the Chief Executive's personal development review, about which there has been some discussion previously, which I would expect to happen. I think some of the others are hopefully might not expect
that.
Further work than happening.
Okay, so are we happy with those four names in that case, including Catherine Snart? Okay. Agreed? Good, thank you very much. Right, so now we're on to item seven, which is the Mayor Hall's guidance, advice and support for employees and managers and summary documents. I have to say thank you very much for this as a paper, actually very, very useful, very very good that we as an organisation are putting together something like this. I suspect probably our questions and information that people wish to ask. So could I open that first off for any questions or further information on this paper? Councillor Ward.
Hi.
Councillor,
I read through it. I did highlight to Adrian Ward that there was some discrepancy towards the end. Has that been fixed now? Oh, we've got something in accident.
Is it
something
towards
the end?
Yeah, this is highlighted.
Yeah,
Galeons, you know when it went to Johnton, it's just that page 31, it's just not been, I think, and unfortunately there was another report that had been copied over, so that obviously isn't part of the guidance, it was just a mistake.
Yeah, when
so
I was reading through, it did look a bit incongruous.
Yeah,
it did.
Yeah. Apologies just for that. Okay. The other thing was that I read through it and it's a really positive policy for us to adopt, and I'm really pleased it's come the Personnel Committee. I understand that it's heavily influenced by a policy introduced by Leicestershire County Council, so I'm sure that it was very well researched by them before we adopted it. I read that the policy itself is going to be put on the intranet for staff to see. I assume managers will be given some kind of training on how to support any members of staff that come to them with any issues that are covered in that policy document.
That tends to be on a one-to-one coaching basis. When we implement new policies, the more heavily used ones, we would do HR briefings for managers. So all managers would have an HR briefing. For example, they did for managing employee performance. For some of the other policies that are more about the, as this one is a positive one, this is already known about by a lot of employees through the staff surveys, etc. And this is where it came from. And there already is a group, a support group, there's a buddying provision, and there's a support group within the council. They call themselves Ofstuff, by the way, but that's what they decided to call themselves. So it is quite widely known. In terms of, there's guidance for managers and there's guidance for employees, and in terms of supporting managers, we find that it works much better to do it on a one-to-one basis as and when cases arrive, mm-hmm, rather than to always do an HR briefing, and then it's probably 2 years down the line before somebody approaches them and they've really forgotten it. So we would publicise this, it would go on One Charnwood, it would publicise it, and with working through managers who may have issues with attendance or performance of staff, we may highlight the policy where it's appropriate.
Okay, that was my other question about publicising policy, so you've answered that one as well, thank you.
Cass has not a question as well.
Yeah, it's good to see this, because as older people probably have been through this in terms of our people in our family. A couple of things I'll probably say. It talks about the menopause support group who can provide one-to-one support confidentially. Where are they based and who are they? And what's the, I think you asked about training before. What sort of skills do they have? I'm thinking in terms of there's a great debate at the moment about HRT, and we look at that and say, can they point them in the right direction? Do they have the training to do that? Do they point them into the GP, or are they at a level where they can actually give information?
The document itself provides guidance on contacts for people who are experiencing problems. The support group is led by our own qualities officer, who actually drafted this policy. And any queries would be referred back to us. If it was medical, some sort of medical intervention that was necessary, then we would refer them to our occupational health advisor.
Right, and that's a county, is it, or here?
No, we have an occupational health advisor. Okay. It's out of the council, but yeah.
Right. The other one was that I was quite interested, it says this is not just an issue for women, but men should be aware too. Mm-hmm. How are you going to promote that? How's the council on it?
Well, we promote it through One Charnwood article and at the Equalities Working Group, where we've discussed it and considered it, and the managers who attend that would permeate that down.
Right. And finally, identify a buddy to talk to. How do we go about that? Is it something laid down how we do that, or is it up to the person to find someone?
The person's given a contact in this gardens to actually look at that link, and then a buddy would be found for them through the support group.
Thank you. Okay. I'm pleased to see this come forward.
Yeah, I think we are. All on. I think it's good. Councillor Bowen.
Thank you, Chair. I just really echo the point made about the education to men. I've worked for five years-ish in occupational health, and I'll be honest, before that, if you'd have said to me menopause, I'd have gone, well, it's like puberty or something, it's what you go through, and then that's part of life. But having seen sort of some of the symptoms you're talking about here from people we've dealt with, it really can be quite disabilitating. Potentially you've got relatives that are doing, you can recognise, you can go, they're reacting that way, and that's happening because of menopause. But if you're not educated, and I don't mean that disparagingly, you might just see them as standalone things. And that's why I think it is important so that the men do understand what's going on, and that managers, male managers, know what's going on, and so they don't just see someone skiving off, someone not concentrating, but they actually can put two and two together to get four and be able to offer the help that they need.
Thank you. Any other comments anyone wishes to raise? No. The recommendation is that the Personnel Committee formally accept the menopause guidance document attached as Annex A and the summary document attached as Annex B. I would like to propose that. Is anyone wishing to second? Pretty well all the hands up. I saw yours first, Councillor Ward. So, Councillor Ward, everyone happy for that?
Yeah, great.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Gail, as well, for the answers. We're now on to item 8, which is the equal pay order 1st of April 2018 to 31st of March 2019. So the report sets out information regarding the outcome of equal pay audit, which carried out on the council's workforce during that period. Are there any questions of clarity or information anyone wishes to raise? Councillor Baldwin.
Yeah, I've got a couple. On page 38, it talks about job descriptions not being completed in repairs and maintenance, and also the review of essential car users as recommended. I just wonder whether it would be helpful to have a start and finish date for these so they don't slip.
The start and finish date for the job profiles came and went, because this was for the job profiles, and we have talked to the head of service there about those job profiles.
Yeah, has it been completed?
No.
Is it likely to be started?
There's been some start on it, and we're talking to that particular head of service. It's a small number of job profiles, but yeah, it does need to be completed.
Right. So your question is, can we actually set a date for its completion?
I haven't set a date for the completion because, you know, we're an advisory service as such.
Could maybe we ask that they are completed by the time of the next, and we have a report back to the next committee to confirm whether they've actually been completed?
Okay.
I think that's probably
acceptable. Thank you.
Yeah, that's what needs. And the review of car essential car users? When's that likely to start?
There was information back in this report about the essential car users. That information showed us that it's probably our most expensive allowance. But from an equalities perspective, because that was the purpose of this report, there was found to be no gender differential. So from the purpose of this report was to check, risk assess that the council was robust in its equal pay. There was no suggestion from looking at that report that there was any gender bias in terms of who received and who didn't.
Right.
Essential car user allowance.
Are you happy with that?
Do you want to ask any
more? No. I understand where the...
Okay. Councillor Shepherd.
Was there any reason given why the job profiles haven't been completed?
It wasn't given, but there's been a substantial change of management in there, so the people who were tasked with doing it previously have left the authority, and new people have come in under our veterans scheme.
So we've agreed to ask for it to be by next meeting, is that right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And confirmation that they have been completed by next meeting.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay, so we have the paper as put. We've been asked to the recommendations that we are note the paper. So, with that recommendation, is everyone happy that we actually note the paper?
Yeah.
Agreed. Okay, thank you very much, Gail. Right, we're now on to item 9, which is the Travel Subsistence and Other Allowances Guide. This sets out obviously the position on staff allowances. Can I ask one question of clarity to start off with? Because obviously we have also a similar allowance scheme for councillors. And I know some of the things in here are actually things that had been carried out in relation to councillors quite some time ago. Do the allowance schemes actually ever sink at any point? I'm just thinking about broadband allowance, because
yeah.
I know councillors, that was changed quite a period ago. But I hadn't quite appreciated it was carrying on for staff until this paper.
Yeah, I think implementing changes takes longer for employees in terms of the whole consultation process. And this allowance policy took a substantial time to consult with the trade unions. We didn't agree at the first junction, but then the trade unions came back to me and said that they did agree. So we had some conversations about, was it a wholesale package, was it or wasn't it? And so it was quite, it was a lengthy consultation in terms of this. And then this was ready to come personnel committee some time ago, but then that hasn't been one. So the whole length of the process has been, has been different.
Okay. All right, any other questions, Councillor Snarson?
Just to understand this, on page 42 it says remove telephone allowance for two employees and receive the amount. On page 44 it says three employees are currently in receipt. Is one still keeping the allowance?
No, there's no plan that anybody's keeping the allowance. I need to adjust that and check the numbers.
Thank you. Can I just say, Chairman, that I do like the flow chart on Appendix 1. A bit of flow chart.
You like the flows.
And I understand a lot more when I look at mine as well, where you actually get taken off tax on certain ones, which is quite clear on the flow chart.
I can remember correctly, Councillor Sark, you've asked for flowcharts previously at other meetings, so now I understand
that. I'm very pleased that everybody's taking note of that bit.
Good.
Because it's so easy to follow that now.
Yes, I do agree, actually. Councillor Bowler.
Thank you. I think I've asked about this when this paper's been here before, but why do we pay meal allowance? Because surely you have to eat wherever you are.
It's one of the terms and conditions of employment with local government terms and conditions when people go on training. So to take it away completely would need to have a collective agreement with the trade unions because it's a term of people's employment.
Right.
The rates that we were paying at were above the HMRC, slightly above the HMRC guidance, and we had to ask for discount. Compensation every year, paying more. So this has brought it into line with the HMRC guidance.
Okay, is that commonly took up?
In terms of people claiming it? I understand so. I couldn't tell you very clearly. I'd need to go to the development coordinator to get more information about that.
Okay, and what's the difference between tea and dinner? Because to me those are terms are interchangeable. One's £3.80 and the other's £11.70.
Time of day, you see.
Oh, God.
Time of day. Tea.
Really?
Yeah, you're showing your age here, Donald.
That's it.
I thought it was based on calories.
Right, do you really want an answer to that one?
Is it, is tea like, really? I mean, what? That's
is
high tea.
Afternoon tea or high tea?
I mean, if we're paying high tea, that's ridiculous.
I think from discussions with the development coordinator, dinner isn't claimed on a regular basis, but where you've got people travelling a long way and staying overnight, then they're more likely to have a substantial meal than on a short daytime.
It's a light snack. A light snack.
Fair enough. I think I might be underpaying for that then. A Big Mac's probably, what, £4?
Right. Okay. Any other questions on this one? Absolutely none. Okay. Thank you very much. So the recommendation on this one is that the Personnel Committee formally agree revisions to the travel specifics and other allowances guide as attached at Annex A. To telephone allowances and broadband and the home working policy attached at Annex B. I'm happy to propose that. Is anyone else happy to second that? Yeah. Councillor Borden, that's fine. So all those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much. That's great. Thank you very much as well. So we're now on to item 10, which is a verbal update from a request at the meeting held in December last year. So over to you, Gail.
Yeah, just as a quick reminder, we brought along a new policy which is called Managing Employees' Performance to supersede the old capability process.
We do look at trends of cases, and it appeared that there were very few cases of people's performance being managed when it was unacceptable. And similarly, we had feedback from the staff survey that staff felt that managers didn't always proactively manage employee performance when employees were underperforming. Not that they don't manage performance with performance reviews, but when staff were underperforming, there was a perception that managers weren't always proactive there. We have to be careful that it's a perception, because we always have to manage people's confidentiality. So there are cases of it being managed, but it's not apparent to everybody. So what we looked at, the new policy was a lot more about supporting people to improve rather than terminating their employment because they were underperforming. There was a lot more in there about how to support an employee, and it introduced senior managers supporting their manager to manage performance, because often there was a confidence issue with managers as well, who felt quite isolated, and helping them to do that. So that it was a very different approach to our old capability process. I explained this to the committee last year. Subsequently, after the personnel committee meeting, it was discussed with CMT, which is a meeting of heads of service and strategic directors and the chief executive. So that approach was we discussed with those people. And we also held HR briefings for all managers and team leaders to discuss the approach, to discuss the issues that had been managing people's performance. So you ask if it had made a difference to the number of people who were coming through the HR door and saying, I need to manage somebody's underperformance. So I looked at the figures. They're not massive, but I looked from 2014 when we were keeping them clearly, and we had one person in 2014, four in 2015, one in 2016, four in 2017, and since the implementation, which was after the personnel committee, we've had 10 managers come forward to say that we need to more proactively manage people's performance. So there does seem to be a steady increase in managers coming through the door and saying, this performance is unacceptable, how do I support them to get on track?
Any questions, Councillor Shepherd?
So without going, of course, into any personal details, can you describe the outcome of those managers knocking on HR door and saying, I need some help?
Right. All of those current cases are going through one of the stages, either the informal stage or the second stage of the policy, which is about helping people to improve their performance and about monitoring that. We don't have any at the formal stage, we don't have any currently where we would be going to a hearing where potentially somebody's employment could be terminated.
So, have managers expressed confidence now and a sense of competence as well in what they're doing to you?
They appear to be more confident in implementing the policy because they understand where their level of support will be, and they have their senior manager helping them with that on a formal basis.
I use the word competence not to suggest anything derogatory, simply to mean as a matter of fact, do they feel they have been equipped by CBC with the skills they need to feel confident?
We hope so, but we are hand-holding. We have an HR advisor in those meetings with the managers. So there's a lot of hand-holding at the moment.
So I suppose the outcome, I suppose success will be when CBC feels that those people who are allegedly underperforming are performing well.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
we haven't got there yet, or am I wrong?
We have got some of those cases where they've been on support plan and they've met the plan And are now off of the support plan, okay. So their performance has improved on that area.
Okay.
As in the attendance management, there's a tie-in period, so that it's not unusual sometimes for people to either improve their performance or the attendance during the period of having that supported, but then it can trail off again afterwards. So we haven't got any that have. So if we support somebody to improve their performance and then 2 months later that performance dips again, then they would automatically go on to the next stage of that plan rather than start from the beginning again. In terms of previous cases, we have found that this is one of the areas where if people are facing a formal hearing and their performance is likely to be terminated, we have quite a number of resignations at that stage, more so than with conduct or attendance. It's probably an acceptance that it's not the right job for them.
Is this an issue that's likely to be picked up in the staff survey at all?
It's hard, a direct question in the staff survey.
Right. I'm just asking whether whether managers are likely to express a view as to in the staff survey.
Can I, if I may answer that? So, yeah. In previous staff surveys, it's actually come out as amongst employees that they felt that performance matters
right.
were being dealt with. Mm. Adequately with by managers. That has come out previously.
Yeah.
The next staff survey is due on recollection in the new year.
Right.
I think it's due about January time, and potentially we'll ask the same questions, in which case it's the opportunity to elicit the same answer.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure what that question was. I think it's sort of, if you could change something, what would it be, or your issues, or alternatively we might go down the route of having an IIP standard questionnaire, that's just in which case the questions will be the IIP questions, but certainly historically we have asked questions which have elicited the answer, and it is quite interesting. It's actually I guess colleagues of people who are performing have drawn out the fact they're unhappy. I guess they feel they're pulling the cart and colleagues aren't being managed properly, so that's what we've had previously.
Just interested, did this all start off through the BDR in terms of where we start with in terms of performance? And that shouldn't, to me, it shouldn't come as a shock to anybody that where we are with performance, and we should manage that through the BDR and go through get to a conclusion. So is that the way it works, or is it something that says we do this, well, we just see something and it comes to personnel? I'm always keen on, interested to know how many PDRs are done and are they all on time? Do you check that?
That's something that's led within the learning development section rather than within HR, and part of the people strategy is to update in this year the performance review process. One of the principles in the new policy that I've introduced was that they should be underperformers should be much more closely linked with personal reviews going forward. The current system is very employee led, which is really good, in that the employee will describe their own performance,
sure.
and lead on that.
Yeah.
And there have been occasions in the past where managers appear not to have challenged their description of their overperformance, and that's something that we need to address between the two different interventions, because they do need to sit very closely with the performance reviews.
Yeah. So where would that be picked up about the PDRs, with the how many was actually completed on time and how many are outstanding?
That will be picked up within the learning and development coordinators.
Will that be picked up, Chairman? I'm sorry.
I was just thinking, actually, it's an interesting point whether possibly it might be something that we actually pick up as a KPI within the corporate plan or the business plan. Might be something in the future as a measure of our performance as an organisation.
Yeah, there is. We as directors or actually any corporate, you always have access to your own personal development library as a director. I've got about 120, so you can always see. The ones you would always look at, actually the ones that are at the bottom. So we actually do three a year, which, you know, to be honest, maybe one too many or possibly two too many, but that's, again, that's part of what we're reviewing this year. But certainly the ones at the bottom are the ones you look at. So in my case, they're an IT glitch, but there's some that have not been done since 2017. You can actually see that, so it is important, and we do actually see that this should have been done regularly, so we do get to see that. Now, there isn't actually a specific measure or anything that we bring forward, so we could do that. But certainly that management information is there. Mm-hmm. There are reasons why some people don't get a PDR if someone's off on, you know, there are three a year, so there are quite a lot. So if someone's off on maternity leave, etc.,
I'm just thinking, Chairman, in terms of going to an appeal or whatever, and you go and say, well, I haven't had a PDR for 2 years.
So,
and what chance have you got? So, I mean, it is important.
So as a committee, we can ask that there's an irrelevant or a relevant KPI within the business plan for the next 4 year cycle.
Yeah.
Would everyone be happy with that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. If that's something that we can
so
consider.
A business plan.
Well, because we've got the business plan review obviously coming up.
We have,
and
yes.
Whether we can actually look at a relevant KPI measure for PDR completion across the organisation.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've got a system to enable us to do that.
Okay. Thank you. It was Councillor Bowler and then Councillor Shepherd.
Thank you, Chair. It's an interesting point, actually. You said it's very employee-led. Just thinking on what we said about it, how do I feel I'm performing? And there's definitely a place for that. But I think there'll be an awful lot of employees out there. And I'll be honest with you, with my employee hat on, I'm one of them. They go, I don't know, how do you think I'm performing? And we'll have that conversation. Because if you suddenly go in, what do you think? And I don't know the stats of my colleagues because that's confidential information, then I could be there, and without knowing that information, it's not a useful exercise. So there's sort of two sides to that, and I can see sort of both of them. But my question was actually about sort of the consistency of performance, if that's the right term, in terms of when you get onto plans. So one of the things I've found in a whole range of different working environments is the complaint isn't that an employee will be put on a plan, but that employee is put on a plan for something that in the office next door they're getting away with day in, day out. And so does the manager at the point they go, I'm concerned about X person's performance, do they go and then talk to their manager and go, this is my concern, I'm thinking of putting them on a performance plan, what do you think? Is that the conversation that goes on, or do they just do it and then the employee one day finds himself in a meeting with HR?
Yeah. That was one of the key points that we needed to address in the revamped policy, and that's why we introduced support for managers from the senior manager. So the senior manager, who's got several services, will have the overview of which managers are more proactively managing performance and try and introduce more of a consistency.
Councillor Shepherd.
Thank you. Two things, really. I think we can all see how important this is for the organisation's culture and morale. I think it's a credit to staff's confidence in the staff survey system. They've been able to use that to voice concern about, because it got big properly managed. And I think obviously, those same staff will be looking for outcome, won't they, from having voiced these concerns. I can quite see how resentment can brew if you feel somebody is simply not putting their weight more fully on your shoulders. Okay. Taking James's point, I understand your point, but at the same time, to turn the coin over, if an organisation is a learning organisation to use a job and is very self-aware, ideally, everybody would know what's expected of them, And if it's a sort of confident organisation, a helpful organisation rather than a critical one, ought, I would hope, to feel able to say, I know I should be getting better at this, I know I'm not quite good enough at this yet, I'm aware of that, the important thing, so can you give me some help towards, you know, getting better at that, being willing to be able to understand what's required of them, articulate honestly without fear of indirect reprimand and telling off where they're not performing quite well, and asking for the help, the training and support to get better at it.
So yeah, it's effective PDRs.
Yes.
Yeah.
As opposed to sort of punishing ones.
And that's
a key part of the informal part of the process as well. It's about helping people to improve.
Yeah.
Good point. Now, any other points anyone wishes to raise on this? Because I sense this is a point everyone is very enthusiastic about, quite rightly, because it makes a huge difference not only internally for us as an organisation, but also how we actually deal with residents as well, which is critically important. Any other points? I don't think there are. Thank you very much for that.
I just wanted to ask if every department, if employees in every department do 3 PDRs a year, or if it varies from department to department.
The answer is they should. So the rules are that they should do 3 PDRs. There are some departments that are probably better than others. If you were to actually look at the statistics, I think that probably reflects on it may reflect on sort of managers and cultures in there. I have to say, sometimes 3 does feel, you know, I'll be personal view on this, 3 does feel a bit excessive, and when we were implementing it, I did say that I thought that, but then I wasn't in the majority.
You were outvoted.
I was in a minority of about 1. I know some people afterwards said it, but I think so. It isn't consistent, so that would be an issue. I think there are reasons for that. So there are different cultures and there are different ways of working, different types of team where that's not necessarily such a disaster. But I think the key thing is everyone has a PDR on a regular basis. So if I'm designing a metric, which is maybe something we'll get to for the business plan, which obviously is cabinet, you'll get a chance to approve that. Anyway, I think the key thing is to make sure everyone has at least 1 PDR in the sort of preceding 12 months. And I think when we get to, I think we are in the process of redesigning the PDR to actually address some of the issues you talk about. I think, in, you know, again, a purely personal view, the issue is not so much PDRs don't happen, but we do have had cases where PDRs have happened and performance issues haven't necessarily been addressed. So you're then in a position with, here's a manager bringing a performance issue, and then the employee might go, well, I've had 3 PDRs in the last year, of which this was not mentioned. And the form, actually, the way you can have those difficult conversations, but the form doesn't necessarily lead you
so
through.
It's not necessarily about quantity, it's about quality.
It's how effective it is.
Managers,
so I think
out those reviews.
PDR shouldn't come as a shock to
anyone. No, and I think, you know, Councillor Snell's earlier point, I think it shouldn't really be led by PDR when it's a performance issue, some of which might relate to, obviously might be connected to a sickness issue or an absence issue. The manager should address it then rather than waiting for the 3 months. But I think to be fair, there are some issues and some issues we've identified with the current PDR process of quantity and the actual format of the form and the way the thing works. So that's something we are looking to address. And I think, you know, certainly a valid point to make sure they are up to date. And, you know, we can't have situations where some staff just, you know, clearly haven't had any PDRs or equipment over a number of months.
I think it's just a final element. I think it's got to be job relevant as well. I've had PDRs that have been corporate ones in huge organisations, and you go tick, 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 great, I've just passed my PDR, fantastic, because none of those are relevant to my job. Do you see what I mean? So you could have a performance issue and a great PDR, and I know for a fact that's happened in teams I've been a member of.
Castle Shepherd, final word.
Gosh, how do you do it?
I agree with Councillor Ward's points. It's the quality, isn't
it?
I sort of feel in my bones too, sounds enough to me a year. But what I'd like to feel also in my bones is that if we have 2 a year, then both the manager and the employee, if the employee or manager have concerns, feel able to have informal conversations, even in the corridor, in that 6 month period, to say, how's it going, what help there, everything all right?
Effective management, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we're all in agreement on that, which is great.
Yeah. There's a guidance document with that policy, and that is very much about those sorts of tips and hints and good management, yes.
Excellent, thank you very much. I think that concludes the meeting for this evening. So our next meeting is the 17th of December, and the one after that is the 24th of... Sorry?
Yeah, just one thing, Chair, but as well, I've got the whole committee here, just if you bear with me. Obviously, just in relation to, I think it was item 5 and 6, just in relation to appointments to panels, obviously, we've made the decision now about which committee members will be sitting on the panel. There is obviously the Chief Executive's Performance and Development Review that will need to be undertaken 2 months after his appointment. Are the committee happy for Democratic Services to send out some provisional dates, perhaps?
Yes, mm-hmm.
And then obviously then we can look to confirm. Okay, let's do that for you.
Thank you very much. Right, otherwise, that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nobody's going to say anything until the vote is pressed.
It's really super confidential.
When I did them,